Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Godzilla Pod War Hour. My name is Michael Kelly. Thank you for joining us. As always, my co-host this fine evening, Nathan Bear. Nathan, how you doing?
I'm just peachy, Mike. How about yourself?
I'm quite well. Joining us is Nathan's guest and my guest and Nathan's friend, I should say, Nick Gussie. Nick, a pleasure.
Ah, likewise. Glad to be on the show.
Yeah.
I tortured Nick as a child by going through my Godzilla phase when other kids were learning how to do things with their bodies. I was dragging him along to the video store to watch every Godzilla movie ever made.
Well, I mean, you seem to have turned out pretty normal.
It was a traumatizing experience, but, you know, after a few years of therapy and a little rehabilitation, you know, I think I serviced the better person for it.
Yeah. I mean, you're stronger and you know how to overcome challenges and stuff now. Yeah. More importantly, it led you to a spot in your life where you'd be forced to talk about Godzilla's revenge for an hour.
I have to say, honestly, I cannot wait to take revenge on this movie.
Did we ever establish who Godzilla's taking revenge on in the film? Just everyone?
You know, I don't think Godzilla is taking revenge on anyone. I think Ichiro is taking revenge on himself.
Yeah. Maybe.
There's a lot of symbolism in the movie. It's really weird. For how bad of a movie it is, it's very deep.
Oh,
and also very shallow.
It's very paradoxical, because it's like this stupid kids movie, but then it'll do these rope-a-dope things where you think it's going to be like people are going to jump up in the air and do a freeze frame, but then they'll say something that's just quietly sad, and you'll be like, oh, wait a minute. This is not... What is going on? So... It's sort of an interesting movie. It's 1969.
Yes, 1969, not the Summer of Love. It's the year that Ishiro Honda, who directed this film, also directed Latitude Zero, which is an awesome LSD trip of a science fiction movie with Citizen Kane's Joseph Cotten and Batman's Cesar Romero and the Godzilla franchise's Akira Takarada. We, unfortunately, will not be talking about that movie today because it is just too awesome. So instead, we will be talking about Godzilla's Revenge.
It's, you know, it's the 10th film.
Yes.
Yeah.
10th. Normally when there's a 10th film, that's usually something big. But instead, they did this a la TV show franchise and just did a clip show and added a loose plot around it.
And you can do a good clip show.
Yes.
The Simpsons did a clip show in season 4, which is one of my favorite episodes.
Yes.
Because that's the one where Bart shakes up the beer in the paint shaker and then turns on the
Yeah,
the heater, and then Homer opens it up and like destroys the house, and is in a coma for the rest of the episode, and that's why they need the clips because they're talking about the stories from the other episodes. That was really good.
Yes, you see, I didn't even remember that was as a clip show because I kept remembering the fact that Chief Wiggum is just running to it because it's beer, it's a beer explosion, and
back up on Evergreen Terrace. We'll need pretzels. I repeat, pretzels.
It can be done well.
Whether or not this movie is a success or a failure, I know a lot of people hate it, just out of hat. But I don't think it's the embarrassment. You have to kind of reassess it through what it's trying to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I think as a children's film, it's not entirely unsuccessful.
What I think this is it's supposed to be the lighter half of a double bill with kids. In fact, no, the first half of a double bill with, the 8 kids and the 1 wino who stumble into the movie theater, who are then kicked out as soon as the movie ends so they can play, you know, Maidens of Virtue or whatever
pink
film.
It was released on a double bill in America in 1971,
Ooh.
And it was the top of the bill, and the bottom of the bill was Island of the Burning Damned.
Mm.
I know nothing about that movie, but,
I'm quite curious.
It sounds sort of interesting. I know this was the first Godzilla film to earn under 2 million, tickets sold,
mm-hmm.
which to put that in perspective, King Kong versus Godzilla sold like 16 million tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 7 years earlier. So that's a pretty steep fall off.
Yeah.
They obviously what happened here was they didn't expect Destroy All Monsters to make any money, and it did, and they're like, we need another one. And they were just like, they were out of ideas. I don't know. What do you say?
You were talking earlier about how this is a film that you really need to try and understand in its own context to see that it's not the worst thing ever. My response to that really is, you know, Duchamp's famous sculpture, The Fountain. Yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Clearly.
Yes. Clearly. You can put it in any light you want. You can put it on a pedestal. You can put it in a bathroom. Either way, it's still a urinal, and so is this movie.
It's not one of the better Godzilla movies. They were running out of money, and Toho was paring down its productions. Mm-hmm. They couldn't even get Tsuburaya back to do the special effects.
Yeah.
Although they credit him with the special effects in the opening titles.
Yes, yes.
They had to get Honda had just been around him for so many movies at this point. He's just like, I'll do the effects. So that's why there's, of the new footage, there's very few, like, pyrotechnics and
stuff. There really is no new pyrotechnic effects that I could tell. A lot of it was just from clip footage.
I counted one. That's where Godzilla is instructing Mignon how to blow his fire breath. And that seems like a scene from Son of Godzilla, but it's actually a shot-by-shot remake of a scene from Son of Godzilla. Very bizarre, because the same sequence is in Son of Godzilla, but this is new. You can tell because it's the Destroy All Monsters Godzilla suit.
Yes.
Oh.
The only new thing about this movie is the introduction of the monster Gabara, which isn't really even a new monster. Or, I mean, it is a monster. Well, that's the thing about this movie. It's, in a way, it's the most realistic Godzilla movie ever, because it doesn't even take place in the Godzilla universe.
Yeah.
It takes place ostensibly in our universe with this little kid in Japan in the 1960s who loves Godzilla movies, who also might be an undiagnosed narcoleptic, because he seems to fall asleep in the most inopportune places. God help this kid when he gets his driver's license.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all just him falling asleep, and it's all in his head. So yeah. It's like Gabara is this monster that is, he takes from this bully in his real life and imagines as this sort of troll thing.
Yeah, basically the bully he has in, or the bullies he has in real life, in monster form. Yeah.
But what makes that really awkward is that, honestly, the dream sequences wind up being almost more believable than the real-life sequences of the movie. The real-life... The plot of this movie is everywhere. What actually happens makes absolutely no sense. But his dreams kind of do.
Because it's a dream. It makes so much sense.
It makes its own kind of sense.
He would be talking to a monster, because it's a dream.
Because movies are like dreams. Yes. They have their own logic that's, you know, self-circulating, and it supports itself.
Just like a franchise.
A gentleman by the name of Kunio Miyuchi did the music. He wrote a piece of music called March of the Monsters, which was supposed to be the opening titles, and was the opening titles for the Japanese version. But that was replaced in the American version with a piece of really jazzy music called Crime Fiction.
Yes.
Which doesn't really fit with the rest of the movie, but great the movie's music. So hodgepodge that it, like, fits perfectly.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my favorite part of the movie, is that piece of music.
Just the opening sequence.
Yeah.
It's all downhill from there.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, Destroy All Monsters had better potential.
I disagree with both of you, but we'll get into my favorite scene of the movie when we talk about plot later.
So, yeah. Definitely a fall from grace
for all parties involved.
Yeah,
this is when they started in the tailspin of the series. Just started until it rebounded in the 80s. Things were just gotten off into a wacky tangent here for a while.
And this would be the second to last Godzilla film directed by Honda. He'll be brought back to finish the Showa series off with 1975's Terror of Mechagodzilla, correct?
Yeah.
So, he kind of gives it a nice ending with that, but this is definitely... if we had any issues with him in the past, this solidifies
I will say that I do like this movie because it's the last movie with Minya in it, and I hate Minya, so I'm glad that this was they got whatever the fascination was with the filmmakers with the character of Minya, they got it out of their system.
But they didn't.
I know, they brought it back for Final Wars, and Godzilla had other children throughout the series.
That's what I'm really getting at. Minya is the inspiration.
Yeah, Minya, the idea for Minya is reattempted a few more times.
Including a certain cartoon show?
That's correct. I just wanted to mention real quick, the actor portraying Minya is a gentleman, was a gentleman by the name of Marchand the Dwarf. That was his professional wrestling name because he was a pro wrestler. He was a little person, and he was a professional wrestler. Just wanted to, because he was in Son of Godzilla, Destroy All Monsters, and this was really a showcase for him. So, yeah. And then the main character is this stupid little kid in Ichiro.
Yeah.
Played by Tomonori Yazaki. And he's believable as a stupid little kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a kid watching this movie, I sort of didn't see eye to eye with him, but I was like, oh, this would be my Japanese counterpart, you know, in the 1960s. And even at the age of 8, when I was watching this, that caused me to do some reevaluation. I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I should stop watching these movies right now.
Mike, I have to be honest with you. I'm glad I did not know you when you were 8 or so, because if this is how you acted...
I had a yellow hat.
I am very surprised you're still alive today.
Well, yeah, I'm surprised I made it through puberty, because his shorts are so tight that I'm not sure if his genitals would ever properly descend. Very short.
Yeah.
Very tight shorts.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, so, okay, Gabra's introduced in this movie. I know we hit upon it before, but
yeah.
I like the utility of Gabra, because at least Gabra has arms and legs and can punch.
Yes.
Okay, and that, as ridiculous as Gabra looks, and as crappy a movie as Gabra finds himself in, at least he's a good monster. There has been zero love for Gabra in any of the fighting games or any of that stuff since this movie. It's like Gabra has been somehow put out of, like, people don't like to talk about Gabra.
Well, it's not surprising that people want to completely erase. I wish I could completely erase this movie from my memory. That said, Gabra looks like a giant green pimple. I mean, he's got some serious skin problems.
Horrifying!
But he has a good design. The costume actually looks pretty real. It looks better than the Godzilla costume used in this movie. He actually has some decent special effects. His spines light up. He can electrocute people. I really am not sure why he hasn't made an appearance in the fighting game or in any other media, because he seems like a pretty decently designed monster for how bad a movie this is.
Yeah. So, more love for Gabra in the future, Toto, if you're listening. Also, if you're listening, don't sue us.
Also, if you're listening, Gabra could really use a jaw. Like, just something so he can chew. I mean, the guy needs to eat.
He has one. It's just that the way the costume works, his jaw, like, folds into the upper jaw, so it looks like he just has this hilarious bucktooth nose.
He's just got a huge overbite. I will say that Gabra did make an appearance after the film in the program Go Green Man Go. It was this Japanese superhero who fought Gabra, as well as the King Kong from King Kong Escapes.
Oh.
Yes. All right. Except it was just known as the Gorilla Man, because they didn't want to get sued. But Gabra's final sort of melancholy battle, because Go Green Man Go kind of knocks him down and, like, punches him in the throat, and then just sort of, like, just kind of kneels over his dead body for, like, 30 seconds. It's sort of strange and kind of sad in a way, kind of like Godzilla's Revenge. On a personal note, this show was on an episode of Super Scary Saturday on TBS in 1989, and this was the first time I ever recorded anything, because it was a Godzilla movie, and come hell or high water, I was going to, you know, own it. So I was like, Dad, you have to stay home from work, or Mom, you have to, you know, record this, and both of them were busy doing stuff. And so my dad taught me how to record a tape, and I think, like, my brother was around, and we sort of figured it out, and but then he had to go. But I remember it was just me, and I was, like, in charge of it, and I figured out how to tape something. So Godzilla's Revenge, this was the first time I ever recorded anything off of TV. And I remember at the end watching and feeling that I'd opened the doorway into a new world.
And what important video did you record over?
It was a blank tape. It was my first rodeo, but I rode like a champ. I guess we have to talk about the plot of Godzilla's Revenge. Here's how we could do this. We could just play the parts from the other podcast previous when we go to that clip from that movie. We could do a clip show podcast. I think that might be more efficient. Or just have cliff notes, I guess.
Cliff notes, yeah.
Just have specific time codes to where we talked about the scenes. The movie's about 90%. Footage from previous Godzilla movies. So
yes.
This is not going to take too long to go over this.
So it starts out, we're in some industrial city.
Well, we've got to talk about the titles, because that is the best part of the movie.
Yes, okay. So the titles, at least in the American version, that are pretty much clips of the movie monsters, and then previous monsters in other Godzilla films.
With the exception, no Ghidorah and no Mothra.
No.
And no Rodan.
No.
But pretty much everybody else is accounted for.
There's one interesting thing. They do show a clip of Gorosaurus later in the movie, and that was not from Destroy All Monsters, so I'm assuming it was either shot on set or it was from King Kong Escapes.
Yeah. Also, Ishiro, who's the main character, refers to him as Brucesaurus. The American version.
There's Brucesaurus!
This is the most mislabeled monster ever. Because even in Destroy All Monsters, they call him Baragon.
Yeah.
And they never call him by his name in King Kong Escapes. Because he's just the random T-Rex that King Kong punches in the face 40 times consecutively in what is undoubtedly the most satisfying Toho kaiju encounter of all time. The point is, this monster is never correctly called by his name in any appearance, and that is awesome. but yeah, they show a clip of him, and the music is Crime Fiction.
Yeah.
This is the name of the piece of music, even though you'd be led to believe that it's March of the Monsters, but it is not. I always really liked this title sequence as a kid, because it was just like it cut the bullshit, and it was just like monsters, more monsters, wacky sound effects, you know. Oh yeah, and it showed that explosion from when Godzilla nails the oil tanker or whatever in or oil field or whatever refinery or whatever in Destroy All Monsters, which is like, that's just a great piece of action like that. So I was always like, what movie is that from?
Yeah.
where he's at, Godzilla's destroying stuff, but then it's over.
So then we are introduced to Ichiro, who's walking hand in hand with his little girlfriend. Ichiro's about 10, clearly a grade school student wearing his grade school uniform with standard issue booty shorts, yellow cap.
They're very tight.
I feel that Nathan's estimate is a little bit high. I'd put him more around 7.
Okay, really. 7.
He's a very, very small child. He's holding hands with his unnamed girl. Ichiro is the only named character in the movie, as for the humans go. Everyone else, except for one criminal, is just unnamed person, mom, dad, and the inventor.
Yeah.
The toy maker.
Toy maker.
The toy maker who, in King Kong Escapes, was the evil Doctor Who. That's H-U, not W-H-O. Different Doctor Who.
Still wearing his evil scientist haircut, too.
And yarmulke.
Yeah. Oh, the first Jewish character in the Godzilla universe. We've hit upon something here, boys.
I don't know what else he could be wearing. I mean, he's an inventor, he's got glasses, a beard, and a piece of cloth over his head.
Well, oy vey.
Yeah.
He seems like kind of a klutz. It might be a bandage of some kind. Maybe he burned his head earlier that day.
Yeah. Well, he steps on a soldering iron later. So what happens is, while walking, with his girlfriend. He notices one of the cars makes a sound that sounds like Minya, the son of Godzilla.
Yeah.
And he points this out. She doesn't understand, so he gives her the, why you gotta hate me, bruh? Why you don't understand,
no, she, bruh? She just sort of, like, quietly is just like, that's nice, you know. I don't know if she says it. She just kind of tolerates it, because, I don't know, they're friends. She just puts up with it.
This is really the first inconsistency in the movie. That Ichiro and his unnamed girlfriend really have no business being together.
No.
Throughout the entire film, they, like, walk together twice. They seem to be friends, but...
They're like playboy friends.
But she like, never talks.
It's just, they're, you know... She never does.
And then at the end of the movie, she hangs out...
No,
with,
she talks.
She hangs out with the bullies.
Look, it's the world of a small kid. It's, you know, it's in constant flux. You don't know what the hell's going on. People are bouncing back and forth like a pinball machine. The first minute, these people are a group of bullies intent on humiliating you. The next minute, they're your only trusted friends because there's another group of people who just moved in. You know, it's chaos.
Yeah. So they go and they wave to his dad, who's in a train that just happens to be passing by them because this is... an industrial area.
Can I jump in on that for a second?
Sure, sure.
I will say that Ishiro Honda, while directing this, seems strangely freed up and spends a lot of time on the industrial equipment and smokestacks and seems to be almost like a preoccupation of his, almost more important than like the showing the kids or moving the scenes around, is like he shows a lot of the pollution and like the big factories and stuff. I think that might be because he's finally freed up to actually film, like, actual Tokyo or, like, the real downtown because he doesn't have to match it up with the models that are going to be destroyed by the monsters later on.
It also
he can just film whatever.
Well, it also looks like a kind of his own homage to director like Ozu or Naruse, who direct, if I'm pronouncing this right, Sosumen Geki. That's an actual genre, you know, along with kaiju, but instead of about monsters, it's about, you know, middle class people living their ordinary lives.
Right.
So it seems to be like he's trying to do that. It just happens to also have monsters with it. So, you know, Ozu would, of course, you know, open a movie with, like, shots of, like, factories. Much nicer shots of factories, but, you know, there's that. And then you cut back to the person. So instead of, like, wiping or dissolving to say time has elapsed, you cut to a smokestack. Right. Then you finish the story.
Now, while I definitely see the stylistic influence you're implying here, when we actually get a look at Ichiro's home life, I find it hard to say that this is a story about a middle-class kid. I mean, he and his family live in what seems to be a very small apartment in a very shady area,
let's say. But
they have no door lock. Their door does not lock. As evidenced by the 10 or 20 people who just seem to walk into their apartment.
Maybe
over the course
what we're
of the
just
movie.
Seeing is an age of innocence where they feel they don't have to lock the door. Remember, the police come to the apartment and remind the toy maker to lock his car that night because there's two car thieves going around, or bank robbers, or whatever. It's like, we just want to make sure that you lock your car. I mean, when have you ever heard a cop in modern times go from door to door to remind people to lock their cars at night?
And not frisk you.
Exactly. These same people may not, they might have locks on the doors, but they just might not be locking them yet. Although it does seem like a bit of a discrepancy, because it does seem like sort of a rough place.
Yeah. The rooms seem very small. Both of his parents are working. They're working very long-hour jobs.
You have one scene in the whole movie where Ishiro's mom is in the apartment with Ishiro. The rest of the time, they are gone, and it's just him.
I don't actually think we ever see his father in the apartment with him.
No. No. He works on the train, and you see him both times just in passing. You have one scene setting up towards the beginning where the father is talking to his friend, who the friend seems to be sort of butting his nose in, not minding his own business.
He's concerned that his son may be too sensitive, too kind, too nice, too absent-minded, you know, because 10-year-olds, or sorry, 7-year-olds are not like that at all.
Kind of shy.
Yeah.
I would have just told this guy to mind his own business. Yeah. And why are you talking about my kid?
Yeah. Gee, your son's a little sensitive. You think like, he might be one of those guys?
You've been paying a lot of attention to my son, Bill.
Those shorts are awful tight.
So Ishiro finds a vacuum tube and he's just walking around with his girlfriend, I think.
And then he's...
He gets accosted by...
bullies, who are so, you know, because they clearly have a broken radio and need that tube badly.
So he has to give up his vacuum tube to Gabara.
Yeah.
Who is the main bully, who... He's not the biggest person. He's not the fattest kid. He doesn't have the most physical girth of the bullies. Maybe he has more guile or something.
Mm. He's the Edward G. Robertson of the group.
I guess.
Kind of there.
And then he goes, I think, does he visit the toy maker before he goes to sleep for the first time?
You see, the real problem with this movie is that 90% of it is clip show, and the other 10% of it is so repetitive. The entire movie, I think, just having the scenes in my head, takes place in 4 or 5 different sets, including Monster Island.
I think the whole movie takes place within about 6 hours.
Yeah,
it's a single night.
It's like that afternoon into that evening.
Well, it is mentioned while the guy is, you know, while the friend is questioning the father about his son's lack of, you know, chutzpah or whatever, that, you know, oh, some guys robbed a bank and they went off with, you know, blah, 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 million yen. And then that's immediately, you know, thrown off. So then Ichiro does meet the good, friendly neighborhood toy maker, who has a certain device that I guess lets you pretend you're on the moon.
Yeah, well, he's working on a mini computer.
Yes.
Which for 1969 was pretty impressive,
mm-hmm.
actually. I think because it's about the size of an Apple II.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it has pictures and sound that goes with it, so I'm not sure how much he was going to sell it for, if his plan was just to make each individual one in his apartment by hand, and then sell them as a street vendor of some kind. It's sort of interesting.
Yeah, but of course, even though that it clearly took lots of time and effort to make a computer in 1969 that talks and displays photos of the moon... Ichiro immediately brushes it off and says, I don't know, it's not Monster Island.
Yeah, this kid's got a one-track mind.
Yeah.
He redirects it back to Godzilla pretty quick.
Mm. Kind of like me at that age, so, right, yeah. Nick?
No comment.
So, he goes back to his apartment, and in, I think what we can all agree is the best scene in the movie, starts watching a soap opera while he's eating a sandwich and is quickly sickened by the icky, lovey-dovey talk on the soap opera and immediately turns off the television,
mm-hmm.
Which I remember watching that when I was, like, you know, a little kid and thinking that was hysterical. like, so funny.
Mike, I'm going to take the opportunity to call you out right there.
Do it.
Because actually, it was a piece of cake.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. It was a piece of cake.
Wow.
That's what the mom
there was a note on the fridge, and she said there's milk and cake.
You know, you're right. And this is another underlying theme. What kind of a mother is this who just leaves his child milk and cake for dinner?
Exactly.
Well, when we see a glimpse of the mother in one of the following scenes, she's clearly working as, I guess, a bar hostess?
Yeah.
And that would be the positive spin on it.
Yes.
I mean, she's wearing a kimono in a clearly kind of... upscale establishment, and there are several gentlemen.
Yeah, who she might
be diners. You know, it might be an upscale bar or some kind of restaurant, or it could be, you know, something a little seedier.
Yeah. Ishiro conks out at this point.
He gets his
computer.
Yes, he gets his handmade computer that is much less impressive than what the professor was working on in his place, but because. His is better because it takes him to Monsterland with
Ichiro's computer is better because it takes him to Monsterland.
Yes.
And his computer is really just a collection of junk with half a piece of cardboard that's been colored like red with a crayon and have little like, you know, meters and dials like drawn on it. And there's actually like a switch that he's stolen undoubtedly from one of his dad's, like, you know, machines or something, and, like, stuck into the side of it. His breathalyzer. His court-mandated, you know, bracelet. but anyways, so he says, computer, take me to Monster Island. And then the computer, I think it's probably just a radio that he's, like, screwed up. Because it makes noise.
It does. Now,
I don't know how you can fall asleep listening to that noise. Because it's, like, very grating.
Whale calls. Or Miranda July reading poetry.
I think it's important to mention how he falls asleep. Because he falls asleep at the same time, doing the same thing every time he falls asleep in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's kind of... I mean, I don't know how to... awkwardly hitting his head and saying... What is he saying?
He's calling Monsterland.
No, he says, take a jet to get there. And yeah. That's when it kind of fades in to this very trippy, sort of weird sequence where he's on a plane with hundreds of people.
Pan Am plane. With white people.
Yeah.
People of the Caucasian variety.
Yeah. And then they all sort of fade away, so it's just him, and he undoes his seatbelt because the non-existent flight attendant tells him it's okay to take off his seatbelt. Then he opens the door to the cockpit, and no one is flying the plane. Now, he doesn't seem alarmed by this at all. If this is my dream, this is where I start screaming.
Now, you see, Mike, I gotta stop you again, because first off, why, even in his dream, why is there a commercial airfare to Monster... What is the demographic of Monster Island flights? You know, I really like monsters, and I'm also kind of suicidal.
He arrives, and we are treated to recycled footage from the beginning of Destroy All Monsters, when the narrator was listing off the monsters that were on Monster Land.
So now it's the same thing, but Ichiro...
Ichiro's doing it. And it's the same shots.
Yeah.
It's Manda. It's the same shot of Manda. Brucosaurus.
Yeah.
It was really Gorosaurus. Same shot. Although it cuts it off before you can see Mothra at his feet.
Mm.
I'm trying to think who else. A couple others are in there.
Yeah. Anguirus.
Anguirus is in it for 2 seconds. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Sadly, does not talk to Godzilla in this movie.
Yeah. He does not.
He's getting up the courage. Still. But then, so Ishiro's sort of wandering around and...
Then he falls into a cave.
Well, does he fall into the cave first? Or I think the first thing he witnesses the fight from Son of Godzilla.
It is the fight that drives him into the cave.
Yeah. Because one of the Gigantuses is pursuing him.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets chased a couple of times by monsters on Monster Island. That's kind of scary, too. But anyways, you watch the fight from Son of Godzilla, where Godzilla fights the Gigantuses, and it's just as awesome as it was in that film. This was... I always grew up... I never saw Son of Godzilla when I was a kid. I just saw this. So this is where I knew that fight from. And it's actually better here, because it's even faster paced and quicker and cuts even more of the bullshit. So it's like, boom, the mantis flies into Godzilla's arms, knocks him down, boom... Blows him with the fire breath, dead, you know. It's very efficient. He gets pursued by a Gigantus falls down a hole, and tries to climb up the hole, and then falls down again in slow motion, and then a vine lowers down the hole.
Yes.
It's not even a vine, though. It's actually a rope.
Yeah,
it is a braided rope, which begs the question... Why is there a rope?
I think this is how Minya catches his dinner. Normally, he baits the trap to have small children fall into this hole, and he brings them up the rope, you know.
But like Death in Venice, when he looks upon Ichiro's beautiful body, he is
stunned.
And it's
he can't do it.
I can't.
It's like Winona Ryder in the Bram Stoker's Dracula. It's like, I cannot kill you. I love you too much.
It's the shorts, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's he sees something of a kindred spirit in Ichiro. Because, you know, Minya and Ichiro... First of all, Minya talks in this movie. He talks like... He talks like Kobayashi from Godzilla Raids Again. He talks
Godzilla teaches us to fight our own battles, you know.
In the Japanese version, it was two Japanese women that were just...
Oh, it was two of them.
Yeah. Well, they'd switch off depending on which one of them was there that day.
Yeah. Kind of sounds like the dubbing for the Street Fighter.
Yeah.
It was Sonny Chiba.
It was a very relaxed vibe. The movie was released in Japan on December 20th, 1969. So this was strictly like a Christmas movie, basically, for the kids. They were out on holiday, and it was time to rake in some fast, easy cash.
So he talks with Minya, and Minya shows... Or Ichiro really wants to meet Godzilla, but before they meet Godzilla, he wakes up from his dream because of...
The toy maker wakes him up because his mom called to say she was going to be working overnight. Okay.
The way... Well, we get a quick introduction to Gabra before he wakes up, and it's kind of scary. But then the way he wakes up is also very weird and well done, I thought, because it's like they take advantage of the dream scenario because it's just sort of a zoom out and everything kind of goes down to black. And you can hear the phone ringing from reality in his dream, and Minya can hear the phone ringing, and he covers his ears, and he's, like, turning in circles. Which I thought that was kind of well done, and he says something to this day.
He's
I'll
like,
be God.
I'm pretty sure he's screaming daddy.
Daddy. He's saying, oh, daddy. I don't know. Oh, like, maybe it's like a pre-thing to Tommy Wiseau in the room. We don't know.
One could only hope.
I have no idea what he's saying to this day. I'm still baffled. Yes, I thought that part was well done. Yeah. And his mom calls to tell him he's going to be late.
She's got to deal with some customers. I'm doing quotation marks in the air again because I know you all can see me.
So he's going to have to eat dinner, a dinner of sukiyaki with the toy maker.
Yeah, the toy maker. Yeah. So not only is he a artist of children's toys, he's also a culinary artist.
He's got many talents. He's the real father, I think, in this film. But then, so Ichiro gets up from his nap, goes out to this like abandoned warehouse, which looks like the most dangerous place on Earth.
Yeah.
Looking back on this, it is a miracle that he hasn't been killed just by some terrible accident at this point. Like, these parents are not doing a great job of ensuring his safety.
Yeah, no one's looking out for him. And
he's like
normal.
Seven, right?
Well, it's like a comment on lower middle class life. You know, both parents have to work. Neighbors have to take care of you. I mean, I had friends in school. I knew whose situation was like that. Or it's like a grandparent is taking care of you while mom and dad work. So within this bastardization of a film... you do get a little glimpse into real life.
Yeah.
But, you see, Nathan, I have to disagree with you there. Because when the mom calls and asks the toy maker, you know, oh, could you go check on him and tell him that I'm not? He's like, oh, I already did. Because this toy maker seems to have some genuine interest in the safety of even more so than his own parents. His parents really don't seem to care. And, in fact... one of the things one of the bullies says is, oh yeah, everyone goes and plays in the haunted abandoned, you know, factory. It's normal. I mean, these kids just apparently have nothing better to do
than get, you know...
Tetanus.
Yeah. Ichiro finds two vacuum tubes. He also finds a picture of a strange-looking man in what is later to be revealed as a wallet has fallen out of... apparently the two robbers from before have been hiding in this abandoned place.
I need to comment on this scene as well.
Oh, go for it.
All right, so these two robbers, and again, earlier in the film, it's mentioned by a police officer that two men have robbed, you know, some bank. I don't think the bank is specified. Mm-hmm. And made off with a bag of money. And these two robbers apparently hightailed it to this abandoned factory and have been hiding in a closet. The idea in question is outside of a closet. And as soon as he picks it up and walks away, these two robbers just emerge from the closet like they've been standing there for several hours.
Maybe they were sleeping. Maybe they are also narcoleptic. Maybe this is like 12 Monkeys, where really the one of them is Ichiro grown up. And the whole thing is repeating itself into infinity.
I mean...
You ever think of that?
The first question is, the robbers could clearly see him as he took the identification, because they identify
him,
and they're like...
just killed him right there.
One of them is armed with a knife. He is armed with a knife throughout the film, and there's a noticeable inconsistency with the knife that I'll get into later. But He could have just popped out if he had wanted to kill the kid, popped out, killed him, been done with it. But instead, they decide, no, we're just going to hide in the closet.
Right.
It's our safety closet.
So this robber, who we will refer to as the robber not named Roy, the non-Roy robber, follows Ishiro home, sort of like, well, Ishiro grabs these two vacuum tubes, which he promises, makes a promise to himself and the audience that Gabbro will not get his hands on. Again, this is the bully Gabbro, not the monster Gabbro. And he goes up and he sees this car for sale and he proceeds to hump the hood ornament and say, "This is a car for sale. Very cheap. Very good." And it's amazing. It's comedy. It's this 5 seconds of comedy genius slips into this movie.
Nathan and I were actually watching the movie a little earlier today. I just came over to hang out for a little while before the show. And
you thought it might be a good idea to watch the movie before being on the podcast.
I was actually just told what movie we were viewing today, so, you know. But anyway, that scene came on, and my first thing, Nathan, was he humping the front of the car while singing, "This a car for sale, but it's cheap, very good"?
Like, yeah, there is no, like, Gabe that kids play. You know, there is no excuse. There's no way you could explain this off. It's like, oh no, he's just doing the jumping game. He is molesting the hood of that car. And he's, you know, he's a young kid, so he doesn't really know what's going on down there yet, but he knows, and he likes it when his dinkus, like, collides with that thing. And he's just going to town.
I genuinely believe that was an outtake. Like, they were doing that scene, and at one point, the kid playing Yoshiro just jumps up on the car and starts humping it. And the director's like, yes!
Honda's like, I don't care anymore.
That's going in the film. Brilliant.
Print it.
I am shooting Latitude Zero simultaneously. I'm going on 40 minutes of sleep. Print it. Check the gate. Moving on. And then the first, what I'm going to think, maybe the first clearly homosexual character in this Godzilla universe, the guy who comes out and is like, "Oh, what are you doing? Get away from that. Don't touch it. This isn't one of your little games." You know, it's like, whoever was doing the voiceover made the conscious decision to try and make this character be as flamboyant as possible.
Who was Cedric Square?
Oh, God. The fucking...
He sounds like Cedric Square.
You mean the guy who's like, "Wow, wow, wow."
No, it's just like, "Oh, careful." This, you know, he always had that, like, that cheap pun.
Charles Nelson Reilly?
I think, you know.
Okay, this is the Charles Nelson Reilly of the Godzilla universe.
Yeah, just like, "Oh, God, you're going to get dirty." You know, and then, of course,
get away from there. So it's like...
And then, of course, he pushes down the radio antenna in another Freudian undertone.
Yeah, I don't remember Shiro bringing the antenna up. I think he's just...
Oh, he brought one up. It just was...
It happened when he was humping the car, let's be honest here.
It's all there. It's
natural.
There.
It's nothing to be ashamed of. Moving
so,
on.
Then the robber who's not Roy is kind of hanging out around the car, and Charles Nelson Reilly comes up to him and is like, "Oh, well, I'm not selling the car, but I know who is." And it's later revealed that the toy maker is selling the car, and the toy maker works at home. So he could just turn around and go get the toy maker and be like, "You know, there's a guy out here who wants to sell your car. You know, put down your soldering iron." But he's like, because he's not doing a very good job selling it, you know.
Yeah.
But the robber who's not Roy sees a cop car going by and very non-smoothly breaks up the deal and, you know, runs away. But not before spotting where Ishiro lives, because Ishiro goes home and very conveniently opens up the sliding glass door and takes in the laundry at that exact second that the robber is looking at the apartments is like, "Oh, that one.
That one."
Then
he's got clean clothes.
Yeah. He has a dinner of sukiyaki with the toy maker.
Yeah.
Where the toy maker warns him not to eat too much too fast.
Yeah. And then Ichiro warns him not to wake him up when he's sleeping because he's dreaming about Monster Island and he doesn't want to be awakened. Because logic.
Because he's going to be hanging out with Godzilla some more.
Yeah.
So then he, he found some headphones.
Yes, in the abandoned building.
In the abandoned building. So he's excited to use those on his computer.
Yes.
So he plugs those in and immediately passes out again. Cut to Ichiro, Minya hanging out on Monster Island. We see the Godzilla versus the sea monster fight. We see the Godzilla fight the jets, also from Godzilla versus the sea monster again.
And then he talks to Minya again.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure this is when Godzilla teaches
how
to, you know. And this is where we learn about Minya's more intricate fetish, because he seems to only be able, you know, he only has his smirkles, as we discussed on last show, you know, just
the smoke circles that he blows, smirkles.
So,
smirkles, gotcha.
So Godzilla realizes, and Minya realizes, that the only way that he can actually blow a full load is when someone steps on his tail. So that's when he gets the full-on Godzilla radioactive breath.
Right, the steady stream.
Yes, the steady stream. Yes. Just like in Ghostbusters.
Which is demonstrated via child abuse yet again by Godzilla in a scene that you would swear you saw in Son of Godzilla, but is actually, again, a shot-for-shot recreation for this movie. Which seems counterintuitive, actually. You'd think... also in this fight... in this segment on Monster Island, you do get to see Godzilla fight Spiga again.
Yes.
And this presented the filmmakers with an interesting challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you noticed this. I didn't notice it until the last time I watched it and why they did it. Okay, so here's what's going on. Ichiro and Lil Minya. And Minya is the same size as Ichiro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like 4 feet tall or whatever. They are standing in the trees watching Godzilla and Spiga fight.
Yes.
All right. Now, the only time the filmmakers, their only option was to use stock footage because they didn't want to spend money. The only time that Godzilla has ever fought Spiga, the giant spider, was in Son of Godzilla, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they were fighting, the character of Minya, full size, was already in that scene, knocked out right next to Spiga.
Yeah.
Now, this would have created a temporal paradox within the dream because you'd have Minya in two places at the same time. And, of course, you can't do that. So, there's certain shots with Spiga where there's this very clumsily animated rock in front of him. Okay, that's actually just covering up where Minya was from the stock footage from Son of Godzilla. So,
yeah.
Look for it. Like, I didn't notice it until this time because I was looking, I was actively looking for Minya because I had just watched Son of Godzilla. I was like, how the fuck are they going to do this? And no, and now that I've seen it, I can't unsee it.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the film itself.
Oh, how we wish we could.
So, that I just thought that was interesting. I noticed that this last time through.
So, something I noticed this last time watching it. In this segment, we see Minya has the ability to shrink and grow.
Which is expressly photographing his crotch when that happens.
Yes, they zoom in for whatever reason.
They do, like, very awkward. Even when I was, like, 7 years old, I'm like, why is this so close to his winker? Like, what is going on?
But this brings up the interesting question. Can all of the monsters shrink? Can Godzilla shrink and he's just an asshole and refuses?
It's because it's his dream. I mean, in his dream, probably. And you know what would have been cool for this end fight? Ichiro should have grown big himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously really good at lucid dreaming.
Yeah.
He can go back to the same dream world every time he sleeps. I think we've all had those dreams where we wake up and we're like, I want to go back to where I was. Please, let me fall asleep again and go back there. And it all involves childish monsters and innocent and fun Christmas things, right?
And NyQuil.
Yeah. Well, we'll use that. That's fine. this kid is if he can survive getting a driver's license with his narcolepsy, he's got a brilliant career as research in lucid dreaming.
Or just the next Guillermo del Toro.
But he notices Godzilla training Minya on how to breathe fire, and he says, "Terrific fight!" like an idiot, because there's no fighting going on. And then the trees come alive from behind him and snatch him in a very horrifying way. And it's very frightening. Now, people who say this movie sucks, or it's like stupid, or it's like, that scene is effective. I don't care. Like that did not need to be that way, but it was. It's fucked up, and it's like scary, and it's, guess what? That's what would happen if it was a dream. You know?
You know what, Mike? I will completely agree with you. As much as I hate this movie, that was actually a really nice dream to reality sequence. Like, the transfer there was great. Unfortunately, the next scene takes away everything cool about that. Because it is, once again, the two dumbest robbers in it. I have no idea how they... See, this is the point I was going to bring up earlier. How did they rob a bank armed with only a knife and the level of intelligence that says, go hide in a closet?
Yeah.
They probably robbed...
Like, indefinitely.
Yeah, they probably just went up to... They just happened to be with, at the worst bank. The bank is about to foreclose or something.
The timeline is really weird here because, okay, it makes sense if they just robbed this bank to just hide out in this abandoned building until the heat clears off for, like, the next couple hours, but the guy reads about them robbing the bank in a newspaper, which means this happened, like, at least yesterday.
Right.
So they... Is their plan just to hide in that closet just for, like, the next 2 or 3 days? Do they have food in there? Do they ever come out? We don't know. So they take Ishiro to
the same
abandoned factory from before.
Now, if you think about it, if they had just not kidnapped him, no one would have known they were there. Nobody bothered to ask. Even when Ichiro brought up the fact that he found a license, everyone ignored it.
Right.
You know,
because they don't love him.
Mr. Center Square selling the car completely ignored him.
Yeah.
Because he was too worried about kid humping car.
get that pervert away from this car I'm trying to sell.
You know, no one ever would have suspected anybody in that creepy place. But nope, they had to take the kid in with them.
And, you know, Ishiro, he's already slept for 3 or 4 hours in the last 5 hours, and he's scared for his life. These men, he doesn't know who they are. They could be seconds away from murdering him.
They tied him to a chair?
Yeah, that the robber who is named Roy, we find out his name is Roy, he takes the knife out, unsheathes it, rather, and then sticks it into a piece of, like, a wooden crate behind, inches from Ishiro's head. Mm. Ishiro promptly falls asleep again.
I do want to make the point. That's actually something I was going to bring up. He does that. He takes out his pocket knife and slams it into a crate. He never takes it out of that crate.
No.
We never see... But later in the movie, he will pop it out of his jacket.
Well, we don't know how long Ishiro was out.
This is true. The kid does have some kind of disorder.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I'm thinking, if this kid is falling asleep under these conditions, he has some, like, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4 ability just to will himself. He's like one of the dream warriors. Well, you know? Again, he can just, like, fall asleep
remember
instantly.
Remember how he falls asleep. Like, he's tied up, and he's just like, Monster Island, Monster Island! And he goes to sleep.
In there. I think this scene might not be a dream. It might just be he's so horrified, he's just, like, forcing himself
into... He's hallucinating.
Hallucinating.
Find a happy place.
Yeah, he's literally going to his happy place, and that is Monster Island. Like, he is in such a state of terror that he's about to be murdered that he has no choice but to fantasize about Godzilla fighting Gabra. So
he goes back, and this time he talks to Minya, and they notice that Gabra's there, and Ichiro reminds him that, you know, Godzilla's telling him not to be a wimp, to fight his own battles, you know, man up, you know. So, Minya, of course, grows, and he starts fighting Gabra and blowing his smirkles at his face.
It does not go well for Minya.
No. But after a few scary moments and some funny moments of, you know, Gabra just wailing on Minya, Ichiro.
Best part of the movie.
Yeah, where he just...
The most satisfying part of the movie for me, watching Minya just getting punched in the face. I'm just like, yes!
I needed a cigarette when that was done. But Ichiro finally uses logic and throws a rock on Minya's...
lifts a two-ton rock.
And throws it on his... His tail, which gets Minya incredibly excited, and he blows off half of Gabra's face, which explodes.
You can see, by the way, I think this is the last thing they shot.
Yeah.
Because when Gabra was on, when the Gabra suit is on Go Green Man Go, his face looks like it's crumpling and collapsing in on itself. It looks like screwed up. Like, I think... Since Ishiro Honda had no idea what he was doing with effects, he like put like half a stick of dynamite to this thing. It was just like just lit the fuse. It was like, okay, here we go. And it's just like, I think the writhing and pain you get is from the actual actor losing his ability to hear inside the suit. He took the head off and like he was bleeding from his eyes
and the eardrums.
So that was the last shot. That was the last thing they filmed. Chronologically. But then Godzilla comes along and beats the shit out of Gabra. It's a great fight.
Yeah.
You know, in all of this insanity, you do get a pretty decent Godzilla fight. It's a lot to get through to get there.
And
it's a real test.
Gabra's got his, you know, electric pulses that go through Godzilla and hurt him through his rubbery skin.
Yeah, they're well matched.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
You know, I'll agree with you, Mike. This is actually a pretty decent fight. It has a bit of a kooky conclusion with the whole Minya jumping like six stories onto a log to defeat him, but
yeah.
Somehow there's a log big enough and sturdy enough to hold a monster that's what 500 feet tall.
It was a very big tree.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's in the mind of a child.
Yes.
And well, okay, that. Minya flips him, and ends the first half of the fight, and then Godzilla comes in, and they fight again, and then Godzilla flips him.
Yeah.
And that's the end. Then Gabra just gets up and goes away, or whatever.
And then Ichiro wakes up, and, you know, the robbers, you know, plan to take him away with...
They state that they're not going to kill him.
Yeah.
Which I guess is good.
So they just tie him up and then take him into the car, the car that you know, Mr. you know what's his Center Squared just didn't want anyone touching, you know, the
Japanese Charles Nelson Reilly.
Yes. So they take
don't him be afraid to use your nails, boys.
So they. They put him in the car. They put him in the car.
Concentrate.
And then...
All right, they put him in the car, and then Not Roy goes out to try and start the car, because they're trying to hotwire it. It's not working. He goes out, he checks the engine. This is taking a while. Roy gets out of the car, and Not Roy is the real idiot of the film, but Roy isn't smart either. He just kind of sticks his hand in the engine block and goes, ah!
Engines are hot. Who knew?
Engines are hot. I'm not smart.
This is harder than robbing a bank.
And they've only tied Yachiro up, by the way, with what looks like a cloth, a handkerchief, or
and
something.
And they only
like,
tie his hands.
And they gag him too. Yeah, they have something.
And
in his
like
mouth.
He Roy tells him not to try to escape. He's like, now both of us are going to be out of the car, but don't go anywhere.
And of course, he escapes.
Yeah, because he values human life, you know? And he's like, he sees an obvious...
I'm going to argue with that, though, because in a moment of immense stupidity, he runs back to the abandoned factory they were just keeping him captive in.
Let me tell you, Ishiro could make a great future slasher victim. He knows immediately how to get himself cornered.
Places he could run to. The police... His neighbors, the bar down the street everyone was at a half an hour ago.
With the police.
The train yard where his dad works. The bar where his mom works. No, abandoned factory. That is the safest place.
Death assured, we're going. The next 15 minutes of the movie is like a pre-make of Home Alone 2.
I was about to say, it's like Home Alone, but somehow a lot more retarded, and that's giving Macaulay Culkin a lot of credit.
It's just, okay, Not Roy falls through a hole in the floor, And that's probably my other favorite part of the movie. It's like, I fell through a hole in the floor. But I still say that to my brother.
I mean,
it's an inside joke.
It's not something like, oh, there was a weak patch of ground because it's an old crumbling building. No, earlier in the movie, Yachiro, when he's tied to the chair, moves newspapers over the hole with his feet.
Yeah.
And then later, Not Roy just goes, oh, I forgot this was here.
Yeah, and he's been spending days in this building. Well, you think he would know about the giant hole in the floor.
At least in the closet.
Yeah. He's been in the closet his whole life, and he falls through the hole in the floor, so he's got this limp for the rest of the movie, and so basically, it's just Roy is pursuing Ishiro now, and he's like, he gets to the point where there's some other stuff, it's not important. The point is that Roy is out for blood, he finds Ishiro, he takes out his knife. And all of a sudden, we start cross-cutting. We get a little bit of the score kicking back in from the monster battles, and we start cross-cutting with Roy and Gabra. Mm. They are interchanged and intercut like they are one. And then we go back to Ishiro, who then becomes intercut with Minya, blowing the fire breath. But now Ishiro grabs a fire extinguisher.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is like his fire breath. And in a act of zero logistical advantage, expels the entire fire extinguisher, which soaks Roy in fire extinguishment, if that's a word.
Yeah.
But which doesn't really slow him down. I mean, it doesn't buy him any time.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, it doesn't provide any sort of advantage. I mean, it gets him soaping wet with foam, but it doesn't really, I mean, it's whatever.
it buys him that 5 seconds.
It buys him maybe half a second.
That he could have gained by just running.
Yeah. I think he lost a good 20 seconds looking for the fire extinguisher, so I don't know.
So
basically, it's a miracle Ishiro doesn't get killed, because he happens to be running out just as the toy maker... Okay, we skipped a little bit. While they're doing their Home Alone 2 deal, the toy maker finds... Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm ashamed, actually, that we almost missed this part.
Mm-hmm.
The toy maker, who has been selling this car, comes out and looks at the car and is like, hey, this car familiar? Where I see it? He thinks for a full 5 seconds, and he's like, hey, this is my car! We have now confirmed this is the stupidest person in all of Japan. And so he finds the money in the back of the car.
The sad thing, he's not the dumbest person in this film.
No.
The guy who doesn't recognize his own car is not the dumbest person in this film, because I fell through a hole!
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a serious lack of temporal awareness of, like, people are... I think all these people are meth heads or something. That's, like, the secret story that we're not being told, or that's the subtext, is that they're all breaking crack addicts Gabbara or something. Anyways, so, yeah, luckily the toy maker has found that his car is about to be stolen and it's got the 50 million yen in it or whatever. So he calls the police. The police are there just in time to ensure that Ishiro doesn't get his throat slit, because he runs out of this abandoned house just as the police are there. And they save him basically at the last possible second.
Mm.
And then they arrest Roy. And then in what... certainly proves that he is the stupidest character in this film. Not Roy. Who could have had a fucking clean getaway? All he had to do in order to not get arrested was simply stay in the building or go out some other exit. He comes around the corner for some reason. Like, hey, you, over there, you too. Come on, come out here too. Like, why did he offer himself up like that?
And all he had to do was just lie down and pretend like Roy had captured him or something.
Yeah, just don't move. Just or just stay in the building, you know?
He broke my leg, I'm captain.
Go back in the closet.
Yeah.
Or, you know, go out a different way. It's a giant building. There had to be another way out of there. But no, he comes out, like, after they've arrested Roy, he's like, oh, do you guys want to arrest me, too? You know, he's like...
I mean, the thing is, and after they take him, all the police cars just go away. Like, they don't search the building.
Yeah.
They're like, well, that's probably the last...
There were two of them. That's probably all of them. We're good.
No need to search this crime scene. We assume the money's in there. We'll count it later.
Next week's episode of Dragnet.
Yeah. So, okay, but I did want to say, yes, Ishiro comes inches away from getting slaughtered by these maniacs, and he wins the day. And he's embracing the toy maker, and everything's happy. And he's like, Ishiro, we better get you home. And then Ishiro's like, but nobody's there. And he starts crying. And which I thought was like, that's one of these rope-a-dope things where it's like, you think it's going to be like, if this is a stupid kid's movie, just be like, yeah, and you jump up in the air and you freeze frame. But no, Honda has he's trying to construct some sort of emotional thing here. We don't know if it works, but he's trying to say that even after all this shit, Ishiro is still, the main thing is that he's traumatized, but he's still sad that neither of his parents are home. Like, he just misses his parents. And, like, he starts crying. I was just like, wow, that's like, you didn't need to take it there. That was, that's like kind of a moment of honesty shining through here and all this, you know, insanity.
But he throws it away in the very next scene because we cut to Ishiro and his mom in the morning. And he's like, you know, I'm mad at you. I'm sorry I was away for the evening. I promise I won't do it again.
Now go like, she has the ability to, like, just say, I won't do it again. And that's it. She's, like, changed her work schedule. That is not how real life works.
I'm just assuming maybe if she is she thinks she is, she's just going to bring work home.
Yeah, like, that scene is just... And the really awkward thing is she sends him off to school.
Yeah. Yeah. She sends him off to school where the bullies are there. And he's just really pissed about that tube that would have certainly made his radio workable. So he beats up Gabra, and instead of...
I did like that. That's like, there is a character arc. That he's just like, after all that shit he's just been through, he just plows through Gabra like he's nothing, which I thought was great.
But then, I guess to prove his manliness or self-worth or something...
He honks the horn and knocks the dude off of the... earlier in the film, they've bullied the kid into honking the horn because there's been this man painting this billboard for the last 2 or 3 years, and he's there every day, all day long, I guess. He's there that morning. So he knocks out Gabra, and then he runs and honks the horn and knocks the guy off of the sign, too.
Who nearly breaks his neck.
This is what you do in a prison in order to assume control over a gang. What he does is he knocks out Gabra, and now these kids are his gang. Because obviously they're going to hear about the story of him surviving the run-in with these two bank robbers from the day earlier. So now he is assuming command as a low-level Yakuza.
But you see, I disagree, because it's not even like they're following him. Because afterwards, like, they all bolt in a different direction when he honks the horn. And then they all get together at the end, and everyone's just, like, holding hands and skipping down the road.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're all friends now. And he hated these kids the day before, like, they were, like, to the extent where he was having nightmares about them, imagining them as monsters, and now he's, like, best friends with them.
And that's the moral of the story. If this story has a moral, it's that you have to learn how to beat people up.
No, this movie's fucking awesome, because it's is the moral, is that you have to fight your enemies physically. You have to punch out people who, like, will attempt to walk all over you. Like, that's what the adults tell Ishiro time and again. It's just like, don't let that guy push you around. You have to fight back. And then, like, Minya's just you have to fight your own battles. You have to punch them in the face. You know, it's just like, this is what they were teaching the kids. That is awesome. Come on. How many Care Bear movies is it like where they sit the kid down and be like, you have to physically fight people in order to solve your problems.
Can't you just shoot your heart power at them? No.
No, you have to punch them in the face. So you tell me this is not a good movie. It rolls credits. So I'm saying with that message and the involuntary comic relief, There's more in the plus column in this film than there is in the minus. I mean, yes, it is a shameless cash-in on Godzilla. It is 50% or more clip footage. But, when you compare it to other Godzilla movies, what are you really comparing it to? Like, the original Godzilla? That's basically a film noir, almost. Okay, well, that doesn't count. So let's... The ones in color. Well, he's evil for the first three of those, so we can't compare him to those. So what are we comparing it to? Monster Zero, Son of Godzilla? Like, every three movies, the franchise completely mutates.
Just like Godzilla.
Just like Godzilla.
I cannot... I understand this movie has some good points. And I've said this movie has some good points. There's some great scenes. There's him comping the car. There's I fall through a hole. And there's all kinds of just, like, silly one-liners. But the fact is, a good 70% of this movie is stock footage, and I'd say an additional 20% is Godzilla fighting
Gabra.
I wanted to call him Ghidorah, and I would have shamed myself on this podcast. Just had to walk out of the room.
No, it's okay.
But
last week, our guest host called Ghidorah Riggins.
Riggins?
Yeah.
The mighty Riggins.
I kind of like that. There should be a monster named Riggins.
I like the name. I do. But anyway, just the movie is so ham-fisted. The dub is terrible. The plot makes less than no sense. The universe is filled with people who are so retarded, I'm not sure how they're alive living that close to an industrial park with cars.
Whoa, wait a minute. Maybe that's it. They're so stupid because they're being polluted to death.
Ooh. And there's the true moral of the story.
Social commentary.
Which, boom, the pollution is making them this stupid.
Which perfectly branches this movie into 1971's Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster.
We found the link.
Yes.
Well done, gentlemen.
Join us in 2 weeks' time for what is... You think this Godzilla movie was insane? You think this Godzilla movie had nothing to do with reality? You can say goodbye to reality, and in addition, oh, sanity as well, when we review 1971's Godzilla vs. Ghidorah, a.k.a. Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster. That is a tale for another time, but it's kind of the reason why I wanted to do the podcast, because I knew we'd get to it eventually. It's, oh God, it's good. It's so great. Any final thoughts, Nick?
You know, I just want to thank both of you guys for having me on this podcast. I've never listened to it. I learned about it like 2 days ago from Nathan. Well, that's not true. I learned about it a couple of weeks ago when you guys were organizing it. You know, I've had a great time. Thanks for having me, guys. Really, you guys should tune in next week when they will be reviewing Godzilla and the Smog Monster, and I will be sitting in the back of the room making annoying noises.
Yeah. Just a reminder to our listeners out there, we do have a Twitter page now. He's a man of his word. He has actually left his chair. He's over on the other side of the room making noises now. Okay. Just shut the fuck up for a second. This is important.
God damn it.
I'm doing my plugs now. And as Nathan will tell you, there's nothing more important than a good well-placed plug. Hi-yo! Okay, so hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook. On Twitter, my handle is Michael Kelly at Godzilla Pod War. We're also on Facebook as the Godzilla Pod War Hour. And you can follow us around for, you know, trailers from upcoming films, pictures, and, you know, other internet crazy stuff we find. We'll try to keep it updated. And definitely check us out there. Nathan, anything to say?
Well, yeah, happy holidays. Whatever holidays are left. I keep forgetting it. Chinese New Year. No, we'll be back before then. Anyway, so whatever holidays are in between now and then, have a good one.
Yeah. Okay. Make it a good one, everybody. We'll see you next year.